if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 181. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamber, to discuss this week's European Tour golf action, namely the BMW PGA Championship from Wentworth. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Good morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament stats and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on social media. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf on Twitter. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. We're now 6,000 strong. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. I'll be placing a BMW PGA Championship show up there later today, Tuesday. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Very, very important, these reviews, these five stars. They really do help in terms of Apple Podcasts and just being added to the visibility in terms of search and the like. Right, great resource, five stars. As someone who gathers as much info as he can each week and does his own stat analysis, etc., I find these guys have the calmest, clearest, and most articulate weekly golf podcast I've heard. And I think I've heard them all. They are a breath of fresh air. And that is from Ohio WA3. And of course, Ohio WA3 is in the US of A. Thanks for that. That's a really, yeah, that's kind of a breath of fresh air, gentlemen.
Yeah, nice words. Thank you very much.
Jeez, yeah. As soon as he says articulate, Steve can't talk. Thanks
that's
for that.
Yeah, yeah. Just got to be voodoo. Just got to be able to pronounce articulate properly.
I always say articulate and I think of artichoke. I don't know why. It's just there's something in the back of my mind just completely screws my brain up. But yeah, calmest, clearest and most articulate weekly golf podcast. I suppose the one thing we don't do is just constantly go on about strokes, gain data and popping in models. So we come at it from a slightly different angle. No PGA Tour this week. Clearly we had the PGA Tour finale at the Tour Championship last week. I was looking at the stats yesterday. I'm not actually going to mention Patrick Cantlay in the stats, but I will mention the guys that shot the two lowest rounds of the week, namely John Rahm and Kevin Na. Now, Kevin Na was 70-1 to win that 72-hole marker. The crazy thing is, and the thing, you know, this is the kind of thing that I do. When I actually looked at my preview and I looked at my 8-week strokes gained numbers, this is pretty uncanny, actually. John Rahm was, unsurprisingly, strokes gained last 8 weeks, number one. Kevin Na, last 8 weeks, strokes gained, was number two in that list. And you could have had him at 70-1. I looked at him and I thought, Patrick Cantlay and Sam Burns were tied for third. I looked at him and I thought, trouble with Kevin Na is, I'm talking here about a golf course that responds to fantastic driving off the tee. And he ranked, I think, last in the field for strokes gained off the tee. But then the rest of his game, his approach play, his around the green game, clearly is always, you know, one of the best in the world. And his putting, we don't need to talk about that. Yeah, he came through as, and that's another, you know, Congrats to Patrick Cantlay, by the way. A fantastic performance from Patrick Cantlay, I thought. You know, I was doubting a couple of weeks ago if he had the cojones to do the job, but he certainly did. He played brilliantly to you know, the second player on the trot now to go in rank number one and get the job done. DJ did it last year. Cantlay did it this year. The trouble you get is with John Rahm, he's always marked each and every week because he's so consistent. He's so good. But he just doesn't win enough for the price, does he? You know, it's another example there. He's in a lone head-to-head with Patrick Cantlay, and Cantlay came out on top this week.
Yeah, although he was starting four strokes behind at the start, so he caught up, all but those.
Mm. He was level with him after. He pretty much level with him after two, though. I mean, it was mano a mano, effectively.
Yeah,
but yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Cantlay. I suppose the next question with Cantlay is: can he actually get into the mix in majors in 2022?
Mm.
That's clearly the next step, or WGCs.
Yeah, it's been a big season for him. You know, this goes without saying, really, with what he's just done. But to get the wins that he has, to progress as he has through the world rankings, and where does it go with him? I think that 18th hole just showed where his game is right now, because it was just flawless, wasn't it? You know, in a world where you could, I don't know, panic or just. Fail to convert at that point, but what did he smash it 360 down the middle and, put it to, 11, 12 feet? And it just takes all the stress off, doesn't it? You know, there's many a player who would have melted at that point with the money on the line and the title on the line.
That was his fourth PGA Tour victory this season. Who would your player of the year be on the PGA Tour? Would it be him or Morikawa?
John Rahm. If you want the player of the year, look at the stats that came out for Rahm. He was like first in about 50 different categories. And that was just the ones they flashed up on the screen. It wasn't quite 50, a little bit hyperbole. But, I mean, you could deduce that he's at the head of a whole bunch of other stats on strokes gained tables based on, like, leading par 3 scoring, leading par 5 scoring. What was it? Leading strokes gained total. I mean, it's just, how is that not player of the year? I don't care if he's not winning. I know we put such a focus on winning in golf, but he's putting himself in position to win tournaments so often, and you're not going to win that often. Like, we're holding these guys up against, like, the Tiger Woods conversion rate for winning golf tournaments. They're not Tiger Woods. So for the season he's had, it's just phenomenal. I don't care if he hasn't won as much as the others. Mm. For me, like, it's not even a contest. What about you guys?
There's a difference, isn't there, between players who are playing some fantastic, mega consistent golf and contending week in, week out, which John Rahm has been, and those from a betting perspective who end up winning and actually converting opportunities and winning titles. And back to Steve's point, he's playing some fantastic golf without getting over the line as many times as perhaps he should. And perhaps that'll change. Perhaps he'll go through a purple patch next season and, you know, nail 4 in 7 starts or something. And it completely changes that dynamic over the medium term. But I'm seriously impressed with Cantlay. And, for me, he's got to be right up there with the players who he should be classed as player of the season. After what he's just done the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Hell of a 2 weeks to get ridiculously hot with all parts of your game.
Yeah.
It was kind of Billy Ho back a few years ago, wasn't it? He was just gone on it. I mean, DJ did the same last year, didn't he? I suppose that's what you need to bear in mind with this. I think the other thing I'm going to bear in mind, big style, for certainly 2023 and probably the next year as well, the Prez Cup, is you've got to go, especially in that Northern Trust BMW, you've got to go for players that are right on the bubble in terms of the qualification for the teams. So yeah, I think that's another big note for me next year in terms of the punting side of things. I love East Lake. I just think it's a great test. It's one of those tests. You just look at Kevin Na. He was third for fairways hit. Look at John Rahm. He was 10th for fairways hit. It's one of those golf courses you just can't fake it.
Speaking of Na, Steve, just earlier you said that Na ranked last in strokes gained off the tee.
Mm.
But a place like Eastlake, it's more really about the fairway percentage in a way.
Yeah,
the distance is not. So maybe that stat kind of skews the approach to looking at now or the consideration of now for that week. But that's, I wonder whether that's sometimes the strokes gained off the tee model will, that's just a not so useful stat on given weeks where you know it has to be about fairways hit.
I think so. I agree with that. Clearly, you know, strokes gained off the tee is more about distance than it is about fairways hit. Yeah. So yeah, it's clearly a critical part of Eastlake. I mean, Cantlay, Rahm and Nahr, top 10, 10 and 3 for fairways hit. They were above the 60% mark. Then you had someone like Tony Finau, who's just slashing about like he usually does, apart from the week he actually won it. A few weeks ago, he was 44.6% fairways hit. So yeah, and he come down, you know, you just can't do that around Eastlake. It won't tolerate it. I think the releasing greens, that gnarly Bermuda. I was amazed, actually. I said to Paul, I was watching coverage first thing on Thursday, and those greens were releasing already. So They must have some phenomenal sub-air on that golf course, because we know how much rain that Atlanta took in 3 months. For that to play as firm as fast as it did was props to the golf course, the setup, and to all the staff there. Phenomenal.
Shows you what can happen when you don't have the local fire department supporting your course setup. You know, the heat over there can dry these out pretty quickly.
They clearly didn't have the Georgia Fire Brigade there every morning.
Yeah.
It was incredible, wasn't it? What can actually, when a ball actually releases when it hits a green. Incredible stuff. Now, that takes us on quite neatly to Ryder Cup. I know it gets incredibly complex for Europe. We might cross that bridge in a short while. If we're looking in terms of Ryder Cup now, and tomorrow, Wednesday, I believe, Steve Stricker will announce his 6 captain's picks. I'll run through them quickly. Cantlay is at 6, so he qualified. So Finau 7, Xander 8, Spieth 9. I mean, for me, there's not even a debate there. English is in 10, Paddy Reid 11, Daniel Berger 12. Do you see any of those? Or do you see English or Berger potentially getting dropped for a Kevin Na, for example? Or do you just think, my own gut feel is he'll go through 7 through 12 and get that, that's just the way it's going to be?
Well, then what's the point of having the 6 picks? And there was plenty of noise about Kevin Na potentially getting one of those spots on the back of his performance last week. Where does he sit now, Steve, in that list?
He sits in that list.
19th
spot, which I find quite incredible, really.
What, would you put like Kevin Na ahead of Scottie Scheffler or Sam Burns, who are playing excellent golf and are longer off the tee going to a golf course that's quite long? You know, I'm not saying Kevin Na can't play Whistling Straits, and I don't think they're going to stretch it out every day. It's just, there's a lot of guys that you have to make phone calls to say, yeah, sorry, I'm picking Kevin Na ahead of you. That just makes that job a little bit more difficult for Stricker. You know, but 3 weeks ago, everybody was screaming for Kisner. It's just the Twitter fanfare, you know, just the groundswell happens when somebody pops up.
The Barstools Brigade.
But it's not even that. It's just like the fans of that particular player are going to press even harder for, you know, the case and start like talking about them getting on the team.
Yeah. And the
I'll say this. Listen to this. From the 11th of July, John Deere Classic, Kevin Na, 2nd. St. Jude, WGC, 23rd. Wyndham, 2nd. Northern Trust, 8th. BMW, 17th. Tour Championship, 72-hole joint winner. Yeah, that's a phenomenal run, isn't it? There's a first, there's a second. I know it's not a real first, but there's a first, a second, a 17th and a 23rd in the last 5 outings from now.
Yeah.
I remember Ryan Moore a few years ago. He was caught in the same boat. I think he actually got a pick in the end, didn't he, Ryan Moore? Was that the year that he went in a playoff at Eastlake with Rory to win the Tour Championship?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
and Rory beat Moore in the playoff.
It From memory, Moore didn't play a great deal in the actual Ryder Cup itself. And if you're gonna put a player in who's, you know, been playing well and there's a bit of noise about him, and you put him in the team as a pick, and then he plays singles and one other match.
Mm.
You know, you're almost doing it just to appease the fans or appease the public. Back to Barry's point, do you get more strategic and tactical with it at this point, where you're saying, well, let's marry up the course and the conditions and someone who's likely to actually play this course well, who I want to play for a minimum of three matches potentially, and slot him in instead, even if he's outside the top 12 or, you know, even further down that list. It's a big dilemma to work out how that goes. And that the very fact he's got six picks does make that, you know, it brings that conversation into the equation, I think.
I said to you last week, in our predictor model, last 5 years rolling, Kevin Na has no points whatsoever on a par 72 format.
Mm.
So that would also include something like the Players, which is, you know, 7,200 yards. So it's just crazy, really.
Yeah, well, that'll change after last week because that was 72, wasn't it? But
par 70 last week.
Oh, was it 70? Sorry.
Lake's always a 70. That's the thing we know, isn't he? He's a 70. He's a short course specialist, 70, 71.
Yeah, cool.
72 struggles. I just genuinely think he'll go Berger through Finau for the picks.
It's Jeff. I mean, from my... It feels like, okay, 7th, 8th, 9th, Finau, Schofield and Spieth are just... There's no way he's not bringing them. They're all going for sure. Harris English, if he's not picked, it's just bonkers decision because he's been playing so well, the golf of his life, and he's plenty long enough. And so the only two kind of ones, for me are Reed and Berger. And the, you know, question number one is Reed fully recovered from whatever he was ill with? I mean, Berger's gritty. You know, I'm not as big a fan as a player, but like, he's so gritty. Like, I'd hate to play him in match play.
Mm. Yeah, and of course, Berger's good friends with JT and Spieth. So I just think it'll happen. I can't see Kevin Na jumping from 19th and getting a pick. Just can't see it.
Mm. Now, interesting to have like a leaderboard of points for the last 6 months to really catch, you know, to really see the guys who are like the hottest trending into the Ryder Cup.
Yeah. We always have this debate about the qualification system. It lasts a long period of time, and then there's people that kind of try and make a late run or got hot form, as opposed to people that loaded up with points at the very outset and could be horribly out of form.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the nature of the beast. Now, that takes us through... Oh, one thing I was going to say. You did say this last week, Barrett. You did say there would be a potential for the 72. I think the bookmakers had a bit of a coup last week, you think it through. From what you were saying, Paul, Nikolai Højgaard, he wasn't even being priced up on Monday when you actually went live with your tips. Is that correct?
It wasn't even in the field,
Wasn't even in the field.
I spotted Højgaard in the field when the tee times came out, which was late on Tuesday, and I checked back through at that point, and he'd been added as a late invite. So by the time it started, not all of the bookies had priced him up. A few had put him up around about 100 to 1, but not many. And he went on to win the golf tournament, so... Understandably, there's a few punters feeling a bit aggrieved this week because had he been in the field, there'd have been a case to back him. You know, he'd been playing nicely. Yeah, he'd been playing some consistent golf. His brother had won the week before. I think most people who've observed and previewed and commented on golf on the European Tour over the last few weeks have been speculating as to when Nikolai would kind of get his get himself up and running in terms of wins and you know, start catching his brother up potentially, because he go back historically, he was the one of the twins who was probably seen as the more likely to be the most successful out of the two when they were, you know, younger, and at that point he was losing 3-0 to his brother in terms of titles. But But yeah, he held it together. Fantastic birdie on the last to take the title, and very few punters are on him. I mean, I've had people contact me and email me in the last couple of days about the situation. You know, when he was he added to the field and the like. But yeah, to answer your question, it was late Tuesday, which is a disappointing. It does happen, doesn't it? You know, we've seen it happen over on the PGA Tour where people have placed. There was one where, you know, someone gets seen as a late. Alternate
once a year, on one tour or the other, something like this happens.
See, when it's an alternate and you knew there was a potential for that player getting in the field, then you can have evaluated that already. But Højgaard was an invite, so. You know, he wasn't even on any of the preliminary lists when they published. It was just kind of, well, let's slot him in and give him a start. And fair play to him. You know, they're talented boys, both of them, and they're going to rack up a lot of titles if they carry on the way they are. At the age of 20, four titles between them is very, very impressive.
So you had Højgaard. I mean, my pronunciation, I've really got no chance with that one. What is it?
Piglet.
Piglet. Piglet. And then on the, I won't even go there, Tour Championship, a load of people were lumping into John Rahm to win that at 4-1. So 4-1. Cantley beats him. So that did the bookmakers a huge favour. And then in the 72-hole market, as you kind of mentioned, Barry, the tie rule came in because you had two of them taking home the pot, Nah and Rahm. 70-1, and I think Rahm was sixes or might have been sevens. 7-1.
That'll hurt you.
A bit of a touch, really.
Yeah. The Eastlake is interesting, and I wonder if this is just recency bias, but are they setting up the course in a way that makes it a bit like it is a difficult challenge to chase down the leading guy or the leading guys going into the week? So last year, this year,
it's always been that tough. That's just a tough golf course, isn't it? And they just let the greens release, and that in a way, if you're chasing, how can you make a score? You know what we get on the PGA Tour, you get it so often, don't you? Especially on a Saturday, you wake up, you've got a couple of players in the top five, and then you think, oh, we're sweet here, and then all of a sudden, someone random who pretty much just, you know, scrape through the cut, shoots a 60 or something on Saturday and vaults to the top of the leaderboard. And it's just all up for you just don't get that at Eastlake because it's the golf course and the setup, as you said, just won't tolerate those low scores.
It kind of seems like the way to reward the guys who have put themselves into the top positions. Yeah. And if they can continue playing like they have done, they'll get the reward for their efforts to get themselves up there.
You got it.
But it makes for a truly, truly boring finale. I mean, as soon as the Solheim Cup started, I didn't watch a minute of the FedEx Cup Finals. The Tour Championships or whatever they call them. It was not interesting. Solheim Cup just had my attention 100%. And the other failing of the PGA Tour this week was putting on their KFT finals on the same weekend just to completely overshadow them. When you've a whole new class of graduates coming in, 25 guys fighting to get their card, and you've all these cool stories you can tell, and you don't give it a spotlight on its own, you actually further shove it down underneath everything. It's just, that's a big fail.
Yeah, particularly when there's a week off the PGA Tour the following week. These lads who make it through the Corn Ferry, if they were told that they're starting the first week of the PGA Tour season the next week, are they going to turn it down? Sorry, lads, we're a bit tired and we're not bothered.
But if you give them a week off last week and they'll be like, okay, I can play 2 weeks in a row, I can play the finals, and then if I win, if I do well in that, I go straight into PGA Tour week one. Hell yeah. You know, now they've got to come down off this and then they got to get themselves back up after a week. I don't know. It seems like a completely missed opportunity to have a very interesting storyline and a very interesting tournament given its own spotlight about the new people coming on tour. What a miss. Anyway, Solheim Cup was amazing. Yeah, I don't know if you guys watched it,
We need to say congratulations to Team Europe, don't we? What a phenomenal... You said that Team USA were 2-1 on to win that at the start, yeah?
I think it was about that, yeah. Like, heavy favourites. And what a week. It was, but just fascinating watching. And, you know, it didn't... I'm not going to be... You know, none of us are going to lose any sleep if it goes either way. You know, if the US win or the Europeans win. Because it was such a fascinating contest. And, you know, somebody's going to win at the end of the day. And, look, it's brilliant for the European team to win. But had they just fallen short, it was still... an amazing spectacle as a golf fan just to watch that. Course was brilliant. The quality of golf was great. There was, you know, can't say enough about it.
Yep, and it sets Team Europe up for well, what would have been seen to be an unlikely double at the Ryder Cup in a few weeks' time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a shot across the bow of people that just think, oh, you know, it's all about world rankings and. You know, USA are going to dominate because they've got the 11 of the 12 best players in the tournament. Yeah, it doesn't quite work out like that, does it?
There's a brilliant fried egg podcast there a few days ago with, I think it's Garrett Morrison and Joseph Lemagne talking about the setup for teams and so on, and a few misconceptions that are out there about the best composition of teams and so on. Yeah, but look it up. It's a good listen.
Okay.
Interesting.
I'll be putting that on later today. Right, BMW PGA Championship. Now, in the old days, chaps, this used to be the premier event of the European Tour. And, it's got its challenges now, hasn't it? You know, with a lot of these moneyed events. You know, we've got the DP World Tour Championship down in the Middle East in December. You've got the ones that start early. Abu Dhabi's always absolutely loaded in January. There's some decent fields, even, I wouldn't say Saudi, but Saudi has a loaded field in terms of the invites they throw at the problem.
In terms of quality, yeah.
Yeah, field depth, strength of field, clearly not at all. But yeah, for me, the BMW PGA is always it's the European Tour event that I look forward to the most. I suppose that helps on the way, you know, that we all attended in 2019. You and I are attending this year, Paul.
Yep.
We'll be there on Friday. So if you are listening and you're on the property, if you want to get in touch with us, Paul's at Golf Betting, I am at Bamford Golf. I'm sure we could potentially meet up for a beverage at some point. We can talk about failing golf bets for a period of time.
I can let rip about Danny Van Tonda last week.
Danny Van Tonda's total collapse. You can. I can talk about DeChambeau the week before. It's all up for grabs now. Great. I wouldn't say it's the greatest of fields. I've seen better at Wentworth. I just don't think the timing's helped. There were rumours that a few of the Americans were going to come across. Billy Horschel has. But I suppose Billy Hall, I'm surprised not to see Will Zalatoris. He was going on lyrically about how he was going to play in Europe when he finished the Wyndham. But clearly his management team said, you're better off having a few weeks off, Will. But we've got Hovland is the 10-1 favourite. Tyrrell Hatton, the defending champion at 16s. Shane Lowry, 18s. He's got a great record around Wentworth. Matt Fitzpatrick needs to do something in terms of just making sure that Ryder Cup spot and just to turn his form in general because he struggled recently. He's 22-1 with Tommy Fleetwood and Alex Noren, who's been heavily backed in from 25s. Billy Ho at 28s. We've got a very unlikely visitor in the form of Adam Scott, who I actually looked at. I don't think he played here since 2005 when I looked it up last night. He's at 30-1. He's level with Poulter. Then we've got Christian Bazaidenhout. Justin Rose, who needs a very, very big week, both at 33s. And then Henrik Stenson, Lee Westwood at 40-1. Brandon Grace and Bernd Wiesberger at 45-1. So again, you know, I could go through quite a few more names. It's a very strong European Tour field. Very, very strong. Looking forward to getting down there. I will hand you over to Paul, who clearly has been looking at this in depth. The one thing I will mention, there is one bookmaker this week treating this as a major, effectively. Boyle Sports, who have gone 10 places each way, a fifth the odds for the BMW PGA Championship. they are genuinely treating this as a major in terms of the additional places. Well, they're effectively offering five additional places for punters this week down in Surrey. And just where Boyle Sports are so far in 2021, this is both PGA Tour and European Tour and includes this week at Wentworth. They have given away 209 additional each way places. That compares to Paddy Power, who are second in that particular league. They have offered 171 additional places so far in 2021 across the Euro and PGA Tours. So Boyle Sports, we mentioned them a lot in the podcast this year, quite rightly. They're certainly worth an addition to your betting portfolio if you haven't got an active Boyle Sports account. For their actual account offering, which this week is a boosted, bet £10, get £30 for new mobile customers via Golf Betting System. You can get all the full terms and conditions, of course, in Paul's full preview. So yeah, Boyle Sports, 10 places each way, and also a boosted. Bet £10, get £30 of free bets offer this week if you sign up via Golf Betting System. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, it's quite an aggressive, you know, you can understand why a few of the bookies have been aggressive this week because there's no PGA Tour action. But yeah, good to see the stance that Boyles are taking. There's plenty of eight places and fifth of the odds out there as well, with a handful of the bookies as well for a bit of a balance. And Bet365 have gone back to their six places and a quarter, which they often used to run at some of the majors as well, didn't they? Which is a different stance to it as well, where, you know, rather than this fifth of the odds, which has become the norm for most bets now, back to a quarter of the odds in six places. Yeah. So, interesting how to play it as ever, you know, how you perceive the value is up to yourself, and I've taken kind of a balanced approach to it personally, but do shop around. As Steve said, there's some decent offers out there. BMW PGA Championship then, yeah, return to Wentworth, culmination of the Ryder Cup qualification, as we've talked through, Rolex Series events, so there's a big $8 million prize fund up for grabs, and with it being a Rolex Series event, of course, the prizes or the points that are up for grabs this week will have a massive bearing on how the Ryder Cup qualification pans out, which we'll get to in a few seconds. I'll just take you through some of the
how background. Complicated is that going to be?
Yeah, we'll try and get our heads around it and then point you in the direction of some resources that might help you a little bit more than our ramblings. We're at Wentworth West Coast as ever. It's the Harry Colt Classic that we've seen for a number of years now. It's had a lot of work done, as we've talked about in the past, by Ernie Els back at the start of the 2010s, and then he did a bit more in 2016 to kind of, I guess, ease it back a little bit. Because a few grumblings and moanings about how it had been set up, and when words like unfair start to come into the equation, I think people sit back and take note. And I think the more recent iteration of the course has been well received. It hasn't really changed the fundamentals, though. We're still talking about a tree-lined classical track, 7,267 yards for its par of 72. Newly laid bent grass greens back in 2016. So the old tired bent power, kind of pot-marked greens that we used to see at Wentworth, which again were one of the reasons that a lot of the players would swerve the tournament or would moan about it and still attend in some cases. They were replaced with their pure bent grass greens, and they're far better quality and far smoother than the old ones. And that's kind of lent itself to some more deeper scoring over the last few years. Just to give you a flavour of that, let's go back to 2010. Simon Kahn won at 6 under. He was a 200-1 shot. And I think Simon Kahn, going back, he was a similar scenario to Nicolai Højgaard, actually. I think he was a late invite that particular week. So he was another one of these results of the bookies that would have not overly been popular with the punting public, shall I say. 2010 was Luke Donald, first of his two wins, 6 under at 15-2 he won that year. 2012, he followed up the year after at 15 under as an 8-1 shot. 2013 was Matteo Manassero's year at 10 under, 66-1 for Matteo Manassero that year. Rory won in 14 under at 14-1 in 2014. Then it was Benny Ann, 21 under in soft conditions in 2015, 100-1 for Benny Ann. That was his maiden European Tour title on debut here back in 2015. Chris Wood won in 2016 at 9 under. He was 66-1. Then we started to get into the era where it was a more elevated, you know, you're getting towards these Rolex series events and higher prize funds, better fields. 2017 was Alex Noren at 11 under. He was 22-1. Francesco Molinari, 17 under at 22s in 2018. Danny Willett at 20 under was 66-1 shot in 2019. Tyrrell Hatton was 19 under at 16-1 last year. So the last three win in total, 17, 20 and 19 under par with the new setup as it's settled in now, the new greens. And I think that's what you're seeing, really. We're not seeing quite the same stringent, tough test that we used to see back in the day. We're seeing winning scores that are approaching 20 under par. And with the conditions we're expecting this week, I mean, right now, yesterday, today, south of England, it's been absolutely scorching. Wednesday is going to be the same as well. And it looks like it's going to cool down a little bit for the tournament itself. But we're still going to have light winds. And we might have some showers late on Thursday and Friday, which will soften the course to a certain degree. But I suspect it's going to be quite scoreable again. Generally, with Wentworth, you need a little bit of wind. 10, 15 miles an hour, anything more than that, and it's starting to get tough. You know, club selection, the wind whistling around the top of the trees, it can make it a pretty challenging test. But we're looking at 5 to 10 miles an hour tops this week, by the looks of it. So
it does gust around there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you
just
know,
from experience of being there many years.
Yeah, and the conditions can change during the course of the day, of course.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And if we do get some rain coming in, and there is, again, it doesn't look overly onerous, but there could be some showers coming in kind of late afternoon on Thursday, late afternoon on Friday, and they may be accompanied by a little bit of wind. So there may be a slight bias if that does it does manifest itself that way, but equally I don't see it having a massive bearing on the scoring this week. And I suspect we're still going to be getting into that kind of mid-teens, high teens, and maybe getting close to 20 under, getting the job done this week. We shall see. And statistically, it's always been a good tee to green test. And if you look at it through the stats of the winners going back to 2010, it's generally a good all-round game, but there's an emphasis on greens and regulation, there's an emphasis on scrambling as well, particularly in the last few years. Now that we've got strokes gained as well, and last year was the 2010 tournament, was the first time we really had a good view of strokes gained from the leading players. That brought it out a little bit more in terms of strokes gained tee to green and strokes gained around the green. Tyrrell Hatton, who won the tournament last autumn, he was first for strokes gained tee to green. He was second for strokes gained around the green, which brings it into context. Victor Perez, who was second, he was third for strokes gained tee to green and 11th for strokes gained around the green. So both of those really quite consistent. And if you go through the top five, Andy Sullivan, Patrick Reed, Ian Poulter, all of them were relatively strong for tee to green. Even Reed, who putted absolutely lights out, he was still top 20 for strokes gained tee to green last year. So I think that's one of the key stats. I do think if you've got a good scrambling game, a good short game, you're gaining shots or you're saving pars around the greens as well, then that really does help you to compile a contending score around Wentworth. Other trends of note, the last 10 winners here all had a top 10 in one of their last 12 starts. So a semblance of form coming into this is positive. In fact, the last three, just to flip that on his head, the last three winners all came in off of a missed cut. So a lot of them have been playing at a higher level. Bear in mind, that was Francesco Molinari, Danny Willett and Tyrrell Hatton. They'd all missed the cut on their last start, but all of them went on to win the tournament here. So don't be overly put off if you're looking at a form line that sees a missed cut very recently, but some kind of contending or semi-contending performance in the recent past, wouldn't be a bad starting point, I don't think. And if you take Ben Ann out of it, I think you mentioned earlier that he won here on debut back in 2015. The other 10 winners going back to 2010 all had a top 10 here at Wentworth. In one of its either, you know, your current guises after the Elves renovations or prior to that. But each one of them had a top 10 finish here at Wentworth to their name back in the past. So some positive, a positive look, a positive performance here at Wentworth in the past is well worth a filter if you're looking to kind of chop the size of the field down this week. Now, going on to Ryder Cup, because that's going to be the whole underlying narrative this week, and quite rightly so. This was the whole idea, wasn't it? It was to kick off the Ryder Cup qualifying campaign at Wentworth and to end it at Wentworth, where the points would be so dramatic that you can have an awful lot of movement and an awful lot of scenarios. And we have got a massive scenarios this week, haven't we? If you want a breakdown, a good place to start is Nosferatu on Twitter. That's at VC606. He does some fantastic work in terms of the world rankings and how that all works and manifests itself for players. And he's also put some extensive scenarios together for who needs to do what theoretically to make the European points list or the world points list for the Ryder Cup this week. And the European points list is the one that's the most competitive, I guess, because it's the primary list. And that's, if you read through, basically because Rory McIlroy is not playing this week, that opens the door for the likes of Bernd Wiesberger, who in theory only needs to finish 50th to finish inside the top four of the European points list this week and make his way onto the team. In terms of automatic qualification. Matt Fitzpatrick, 24th, to get on the European points list. However, he's already on the world points list, which would then have repercussions further down the other way. But it does bring, I mean, it brings players of the likes of Guido Migliozzi. He could finish second, theoretically, and make his way onto that top four of the European points list. Danny Willett, Matthias Schwab, Ian Poulter, who we're fully expecting to get a captain's pick, but you know, he could still, with a win, theoretically, and I keep saying this because it's going to, depending what a number of other players do, it's going to impact what could potentially happen with these with these scenarios and with these players. But if you want a full breakdown, check it out. It's as I say, Nosferatu on Twitter. There's a lot of players playing for a lot of a potential Ryder Cup start this week, and I think you've got to bear that in mind. I mean, looking through those lists, guys, anything really screaming at you as to some interesting scenarios this week?
This is going to be like watching the FedEx Cup finals before they did the modified leaderboards, you know, where the position in the tournament and then the movement, it's going to be all over the place, but it's going to be interesting to watch. There's so many guys that can get in with a win.
Yeah, it's going to be the underlying talking point of everything, isn't it, all the way through the week. And you've got this complexity between the European points list, because again, someone takes over Rory's position on the European points list, he then gets in via the world points list, which then bounces Shane Lowry out of the world points list, who's currently sitting in ninth position. So should that happen, then it's going to have, you can always rip up some of the numbers that you've got here, because the scenarios change again on the back of that. So it's going to be a headache for everyone to try and work out. I think it's going to be a headache for Padraig Harrington to try and work out, because depending on how that works, it's going to impact who he is going to be picking as his final three players as well, which, there's been plenty of speculation, but the consensus seems to be falling on Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, and one other. Now, if that one other ends up having to be Shane Lowry because he has to take a pick because of his ultimate position on the automatic qualifying, then, what does that do to the other potential players who, could have been arguing for a spot as well?
This is brilliant, though. Like, what, it's worked out so well the way the point system has been set up, and we're going into the final week, which they've targeted as, with so many people who have a chance to get onto the team.
It's maddening.
It couldn't go any better, really.
Yeah, absolute madness. You know, Richard Bland can make it on the lead, onto the team. Danny Willett, Matthias Schwab, Justin Rose, you know, despite everything we've said about his form, and, you know, he's slowly been improving. Was he 10th last time out, I think? But, again, theoretically, he can make it onto the team with a first-place finish here at Wentworth. Rasmus Højgaard, you know, I mentioned him last week, and, you know, again, you know, it's more, I guess it's, you know, more of a fairy tale to see someone like that make their way through to the team. But if he wins this week, he potentially gets himself directly onto the team.
I'm going to be fascinated to see how Bernd Wiesberger copes with this virtual open door to a Ryder Cup spot.
This is it.
Does he burst through and grab it with both hands and say, yep, that's my Ryder Cup spot for Team Europe, or does he miss the cup?
Well, Bernd's going to be the pivot point by the looks of it, isn't he? So if he needs
a lot of pressure on the guy. I know it sounds ridiculous, i.e., you know, you're offering him 55th to get into the Ryder Cup, but that's still a lot of pressure to deliver. I know one thing, Paul, if we can follow Bernd, say Friday afternoon, and he's on the cut line, I'll be following him. God.
You just know he's going to be surfing the line all week, right? It feels inevitable that he's just going to be there. One shot either way will be.
Yeah.
And you can see him age about 25 years over 4 days.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think Bernd, my gut feel is Bernd won't make an easy job of it.
No. It just feels, it'd be too easy the other way, just doing it in a straightforward way and finishing 15th.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he has shown himself to be a little bit
wobbly
under pressure, hasn't he?
I hope he does. I don't think Bernd in the Ryder Cup would be a bad selection. I think the way that he plays the game, he's got plenty of power. I don't think he'd be a bad selection for... But I'm not sure Padraig would... I don't think Padraig would have him in the team if he had a choice, put it that way.
Yeah, no. Whether he'd choose to pick him,
Yeah.
And I don't think, if he gets in, I don't think he plays more than twice, but he's a really good player. And we're just being, I don't know, idiots here and kind of saying he's going to be treading the line, and it'll be more entertaining for us in that way, you know, watching somebody cope with that. But don't wish ill on anybody. Hope he crashes through the door. It'd be good for his career belief to just smash through and just, you know, top five, top six this week.
Be fantastic. And it'd be good for the team, a man in form coming through.
Yeah. With that confidence of having just burst through and, I got this.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. And in terms of the players that I've picked this week, I've tried to steer it away from those who are going to be under the most severest of pressure, really. Again, you could argue that there's 20 or 30 of them, really. You've got this kind of niggling thought that they could actually go and do it. The first player I've gone with is Alex Noren, who sits at 17th on the world's points list. So, again, theoretically, a win could get him in. And I'm not entirely sure that that's where he thinks his chances are. I suspect that he probably thinks that his chance went when he missed a putt on the final green at the BMW Championship to take him through to Eastlake. Because had he made it through to Eastlake, he'd have had another event to rack up some world points. It would have been an opportunity for him to continue progressing, but he couldn't quite do it. That's not to say he's not been playing well, and... you know, if you look at his recent form, he's playing stateside, which for a start, with these players who come over to the European Tour, you'll often find a player who's been playing and playing well on the PGA Tour at this, what is still a lower level, can just outperform many of the others who've been playing continually at European Tour level. So, fourth at the Rooked Mortgage Classic, 16th at the Olympics. Actually, he topped the driving accuracy and greens and regulation at the Olympics. So, some cracking long game stats. Fourth at the Northern Trust, where he was first for strokes gained putting. And ninth at the BMW Championship, I just mentioned. He was second for greens in regulation that week. Had he got up and down on the final green, he'd have made it through to Eastlake. And, it could have been a completely different story. But for me, he's got a trending game. He's been playing well. We've mentioned him a few times in the pod. and he's returning to the scene of that win in 2017, where he shot 62 for a super early tee time, and literally nobody could catch him. He got himself ahead, the weather turned a little bit, and he ended up the two-shot winner, and no one could get close to him. And I was on him that week, and I'd virtually written him off. And I didn't expect to be seeing him scythe his way through the field as he did, and to come and take the tournament on the Sunday. But that's how he got over the line, and that's got to give him some confidence. He's got some other decent results here, some other top tens, and we've also seen some repeat winners here in the past. Luke Donald's the most recent, but we've seen a few going back in history as well. So another repeat winner wouldn't be out of the stretch of imagination whatsoever. Scrambling well, which I think is important. He's scrambled at over 70% on his last three starts, and combine that with the fact that he's playing well from tee to green, he's putting well, scrambling well, and going to a course that he's proven to have performed on in the past. And I think the 25-1 that was chalked up earlier about Alex Norman was great. 22s now, he's been backed in a bit. I've seen him put up in a few different places as well as on my preview, but I think that's fair. 22-1 when he won back in 2017, and I think that's about the right kind of price for a player of his ability and current form heading into this. So Norman's in. I've also backed Sam Horsfield at 70-1. Again, he's got the kind of strong long game that I'm looking for here. For the season to date, 11th for strokes gained tee to green, 2nd for strokes gained approach. Other stats, 2nd for scrambling back at the Czech Masters last month, 2 or 3 starts ago. 1st for putting in Kenya, which was on pure bent grass greens that had been laid around 2015. So very, very similar in terms of age and style and composition to this week. And he's putted, or he topped the field for putting that week back in Kenya. It's just the Friday performances for Sam Horsfield. It's been mentioned a few times, and I've observed a number of people on him recently and just... shaking their heads when he puts together a 76 or 74 or 77 on a Friday, which is really odd. He averages, over his last 10 starts, he averages 73.6 on a Friday. And he hasn't broken 70 in his last 10 attempts. So perhaps he just needs to lay off the sauce on a Thursday night. That might be the answer. I suspect it's more coincidence than anything. He's been getting off to some decent starts, and then it's just been drifting away, and then coming back and getting himself back into reasonable positions after that. He's very, very close, I think, Sam Horsfield. Won a couple of times in the autumn or late summer, early autumn last year. 15th here on debut back in 2018. He was 3rd going into the Sunday, and he's got those couple of wins since that point. So I think his game and his form marries up nicely to this week. And at 70-1, I think he's worth taking, isn't it? You go back a couple of weeks in weaker fields, you're talking 14, 16-1, which does raise some question marks if he doesn't put 4 good rounds together. But at 70-1, I think you can take a chance. Same price, Richard Bland, I've also backed. And I guess if we go back to the start of qualification for the Ryder Cup, and I said to you guys that Richard Bland had a theoretical chance of making the team automatically if he won the BMW PGA Championship this week, you'd probably think I was loopy. But that's where he is. It shows you how far he's come on, doesn't it? He's in the space of the last couple of years, from the point at which he'd had to go down to the Challenge Tour to get his card and to keep his playing privileges, he's come on leaps and bounds. He's got his win, didn't he, at the Belfry. 478th time of asking, that was, when he got himself over the line eventually. But I don't think he's dined out on it, really. You look at his results since, 3rd in Denmark, 4th in Ireland, 3rd at the Gazoo Classic in Kent, 5th last week in Italy. Long game's trending nicely as well. His strokes gained long game stats have been really good over the last few weeks as well. And he's got a 5th place finish here at Wentworth back in 2006. 70-1, I think that's the first time I can ever remember backing Richard Bland, but I'm quite happy to do so. I think that's... That's a decent punt this week for an each-way chance.
I don't think Wentworth's a course that overly helps bombers.
No.
It's a positional golf course. Mm. I think hitting fairways and certainly greens here is key. So Bland fits in lots of ways.
Yeah.
I also noted I think it was his first attempt here, way back in 06. He finished fifth. That was his best ever finish at Wentworth.
Yeah. He's got that top 10. As I said, you know, if you look back through the recent players who perform well here, then having a top 10 in your locker at Wentworth, even if it's back before the days of the Ernie Els renovation.
Colour TV.
Yeah.
It was black and white back then, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. back when we were just a twinkling off father's eyes. If you've got some kind of form here, I think that looks as a positive on the trends. So yeah, Bland's in. I've also backed Masahiro Kawamura at 90-1. He won as a 20-year-old back in 2013 on the Japan Asian Tour, one of the co-sanctioned events there, and hasn't really pushed on since. But there's certainly been signs that he's moving forward and close to a breakthrough, I think. As he's moved up to European Tour level. Second at the Indian Open back in 2019, sixth in Morocco the week later, second in Cyprus last year, and more recently fifth at the Kazoo Open, third at Galgorm Castle, and fifth in Italy last week. And again, it's his long game. It's trending really nicely. There's lots of positive stats coming out of his strokes gained approach, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained off the tee as well. 20th here last year. He was 10th going into Sunday. And I think he's in decent nick at the moment. I think if he's in 10th going into Sunday this week, then I think he pushes forward and at least rewards each way backers here at 90-1 for Kawamura. Finally, I've also backed Fabrizio Zanotti at 200-1, who's an accurate type. He's finished first for driving accuracy three times in his last 12 starts. Greens regulation, strokes gained approach have also been strong during that point. It's just not really translated into decent finishes. He's been consistent. He's only missed a couple of cuts this season, but generally it's kind of been mid-division finishes rather than anything that stands out. Saying that, seventh at Rolex Series level at Abu Dhabi at the start of the year is his best finish of the season, which is strong. He also finished seventh here in 2016. That was his best effort around Wentworth. He's also been in the mix a few times. He's been in some decent 36 and 54 hole positions as well. And was runner-up to Matt Fitzpatrick at Woburn back in 2015. And another one of these tree-lined comparable tests as well. I think he's got the right game for this. And if you look just at his raw form line, there's nothing really that stands out. But I think this is the kind of test where he could push forward and could sneak into a place at 200-1. So Zanotti's in 200s, Masahiro Kawamura 90s, Richard Bland and Sam Horsfield at 70-1, and Alex Noren now around the 22-1 mark at the top for me this week. Any guys or any players capture your imagination this week, chaps?
Over to you, Barry. You crack on first.
I stuck with Henrik this week. Longer price than last week. You know, he unfortunately got off to a really nice start last week and things just flittered a little bit. So, you know, 15th, not a bad week when things go a little bit off. So, no reason to believe he's going to bomb out now. So, yeah, 40-1, took him on that. He's got plenty of good results around here over the years without a win, but third as recently as 4 years ago. So, yeah, bring it on. He can just mash that 3-wood around the place, keep it in play, and let the irons do the talking. So, that was that. I'm with you on Kawamura. I've backed him a couple of times this year. Haven't quite caught him at the right moments, but that head's been popping up on the leaderboard so regularly.
He's going to win, isn't he? He's going to win one. It's not going to be a surprise when he does. And
not at all.
His long game looks really good. So,
you know, like you put yourself up there more, you know, enough times, it should kind of click and convert for you one of the weeks. So he was there again last week, popping up. I was like, damn it, I didn't back him. So, yeah, no FOMO this week. We're on. put a little one on Adrian Maronk as well. I caught his, I was on him the week that Richard Bland won, which was bittersweet because it was great to see Blandy win, but also a pain to not have Maronk go and get the win. He was very close, but yeah, he's 100-1 this week, 8 places I took. So thank you very much for that. See how he gets on.
Yeah.
I find it very hard to distinguish between the just like one thought was like, I find it very hard to pick a pick between the top guys this week, and with the Ryder Cup story intertwined with that, you know, picking those shorter price guys feels like they're those prices are loaded with an awful lot of extra factors that make it a bit more variable to the, how they perform. So that's why I kind of just drifted out a bit in the prices and just took a few punts on longer prices. And look, I haven't made that many bets on it this week. I'm happy just to kind of watch the what should be pretty entertaining leaderboard and Ryder Cup leaderboard movement throughout the week.
Yeah, I did think long and hard about Shane Lowry because he's got, you know, an awful lot to play for this week. Just had a baby daughter, didn't he, in the last few days, and that can work one of two ways. And I do kind of subscribe to this life events, and whether that's babies or marriages or engagements or whatever, and you know, having an impact on the way that players work, how they perform. It may just be a little bit early, you know. He's literally, I think she was born on the 2nd or the 3rd or something like that, 3 or 4 days ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to get straight back into the action after that may be a challenge, but it may inspire him. I don't know. He loves the track, doesn't he? He loves Wentworth. It suits him down to the ground and seems to perform, you know, pretty much every time he gets here. And, I'm sure he'll want to reinforce his Ryder Cup position and defend that ninth place finish or the ninth place position that he's got currently on the world points list. But I don't know. I just couldn't quite pull the trigger with him and any of the others at the very top of the market. But interesting to see how he goes.
Did you see RCB losing his PGA Tour card for next season on the PGA? Interesting. How are players collapsed, eh? Rafa Cabrera Bayo.
Yeah, so yeah, when he finished 23rd. It was interesting to see Christian Bezuidenhout who got his card, didn't he? He's got a full PGA Tour card now as well.
So. Aaron Rye, Bezuidenhout, Matthias Svab. And then David Skins from an English perspective. And then there was one that I'd never actually... I need to do some research on. Bear with me. Who was it? An English guy, Callum Tarran. So they've all got PGA Tour cards for next year. I kind of agree with Barry in a way. I think there's so much of this Ryder Cup pressure on. I'm going to keep it quite simple this week. I'd looked at Hatton. I looked at Danny Willett. And you look at, and even Francesco Molinari, you look at the guys that have won around Wentworth recently. They'd all had some top 5 strokes going off the tee performances arriving in Surrey. And I do think strong drivers, not necessarily power bombers, but guys that can hit it, you know, straight, true, and gain off the tee have a good advantage around Wentworth. I'm going to be really boring. Also, I mean, I'm just looking at world rankings for this. Hovland is the best in the field at 14. Hatton, 17, who I think is horribly out of form. Fitzpatrick, 26, who hasn't shown a lot recently. And Billy Ho at 28. They're the top 4 in the world rankings in this field. So I'm going to go win only Victor Hovland 10-1. I think if he actually play it. And I do believe that there's this huge drop from PGA Tour action at the high end to European Tour action. I just think if this, for me, would be Hovland's biggest win of his career today. I think 11th here on the only time he's played here in 2019. I think it's a pretty perfect course for Victor. He can just plot his way around with that great driving and great approach play. He was also interesting at Eastlake last week. 5th for scrambling, 1st for greens in regulation. That's not a bad combo. He also topped approach play at the Tour Championship. He was first for strokes gained approach, first for strokes gained tee to green at the Tour Championship. I mean, that's an amazing performance for me. He also won in Germany this year, coming off the US Open the week before. So he travelled from the West Coast. So I'm not overly concerned about the travel either. It's a far tougher journey West Coast to London than it would be East Coast to London. So I'm in on Hovland at 10s. I also think Billy Ho at 28-1. I think that's not a bad price for a guy that's the fourth best in the world here. And he was third here on his only appearance back in 2019. If you actually look at Billy Ho, he's been driving the ball really nicely recently. I think he could plot his way around it. And has absolutely no Ryder Cup concerns whatsoever. Nor does Victor. Yeah, just come over in free run. So 28-1, I thought on Horschel was a good price. The other one who's been doing so well in the States, I can't tell you he's been driving the ball well because he hasn't, but he's also had a period of time off, is Brandon Grace, whose approach play is outstanding right now. And you just look at where he's done well recently over in the US. Fourth at Memorial, you know, tree lined 7,300 yard golf course. Seventh at Torrey Pines in the US Open and second in that six-man playoff at Sedgefield at the Wyndham. Again, tree-lined, Donald Ross design, short. I wouldn't be surprised to see Grace get in the mix. We know that he prefers bent grass to anything else. So, yeah, for me, Grace, I love Billy Ho, and I'll just go win only on Victor Hovland if he does a Tyrrell Hatton from last year and kind of is the favourite or second favourite and just kind of just takes it out. My concern with Shane Lowry would be his driving of late hasn't been the best. I do think you want to be driving the ball well this week.
Yeah, there's a few little question marks about a few of them, but as ever, they can find that missing ingredient potentially, you know, particularly when push comes to shove this week. But now, looking forward to this week, it should be a fascinating few days as it all unfolds. And let's hope there's some real drama still up for grabs as we head into Sunday and the business end of it.
Absolutely. That's us done, yeah?
Yes, I think so. What we've got next week? Dutch Open for me, I think it is.
Dutch Open for you and the 40-net championship on the PGA Tour for me, which is basically the old fries.com. It's the one that they play at Silverado.
Oh, yeah, Silverado, yep. Good.
It's normally full of smoke, isn't it, as California's burning and they're all wearing masks at Silverado.
Yeah, and you've got some of the new influx from the Corn Ferry coming through as well.
I've said this week after week, apparently John Rahm is playing the 4-minute next week, so we'll probably be going off about 3-1 favourite. So that'd be interesting. Right, thanks for your time, chaps. I hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck.
Good luck, everybody, yeah.
5-star reviews, listeners, absolutely essential. So if you could deliver some of those this week, that would be fantastic. And we'll be back next week for some European Tour and the first PGA Tour event of their new season. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf.